no-hitter.
Every White Sox game.
Give me the hot sauce.
Every Bulls game.
GWG.
Every Blackhawks game. It's all here.
Make sure you guys tune in.
It's only here on NBC Sports Chicago.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Pat Boyle, joined by Blackhawks insider from NBCSportsChicago.com, Charlie Remeliotis. We recap the biggest regular season win of the Jeremy Colleton era on the West Side as the Hawks erased a three-goal deficit in the final 10 minutes and pull things out on Brandon Hagel's overtime game winner. We'll also take a look at the four-minute power play that could have given the Blackhawks an important regulation win. What happened there? Vinny Hinostroza continues to impress in his second go-around with the Blackhawks. What is going on with Connor Murphy's helmet? Malcolm Subban, are you starting Friday night again in a critical game against Nashville? We'll discuss the latest in the race for the four spot in the Central Division, and we will have the latest report on Jonathan Toews' status from Darren Drager. It's all coming up on the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Charlie, what a crazy, effing, emotional ride Wednesday night was. The goal in the final second of the second period, the goal in the opening minute of the third period where Murphy lost his helmet again. They're down 4-1. We know they haven't beaten this team. They haven't scored three goals against them. How the heck are they going to score five goals? And lo and behold, they get the equalizer. They score the three in less than 4 minutes. And did you ride that wave of that roller coaster of emotion?
Yeah. So first of all, I got so many texts after that third, after the Nashville went up 4-1, like, good night, Blackhawks are done. Things like that. Right.
This isn't over.
This is over. And here's me. Obviously I'm a writer. Right. So I'm writing, as soon as Nashville goes up 4-1, I'm writing my story. I'm writing my obituary.
Yes.
Like, this is it. Must win game. The Blackhawks had to pick up at least 4 out of 4 points in these next two games against Nashville. And you know, you look up and it's 4-2, and you look up again and it's 4-3. And then you look up and it's a tie game. And then you look up and they have a 4 minute power play. And you're like, they're going to get this done in regulate. Like, it's so bizarre that they score 8 goals against Nashville in the first 6 games, and then they score 3 goals against that in 2 minutes and 51 seconds. That's hockey. I can't even explain that.
Well, okay, it's so rare. Listen to this stat. The Blackhawks erased a 3-goal deficit in the final 10 minutes of regulation to win for just the second time in franchise history. I mean, that is crazy. It was the 9th time that they erased a 3-goal deficit in the third and went on to win. But I mean, we've seen when this team was clicking, there was no lead that was or a deficit that was insurmountable. I mean, you know, that 2013 year, they could be down and you're like 4-1, s'more 1. I mean, this thing, they'll find a way. This is not that team. And this is not the team they were playing either, who, you know, still out chanced them and out high danger chanced them. And it looked like we were going right down the path of
of Monday night's game too, where it was a tight game and then these boom, boom, two crazy goals. And the next thing you know, you're like, okay, this thing's over.
And it's just bizarre. Just the way hockey works sometimes. Like UC Saros has been unbelievable for the Nashville Predators. Not just the fact that Nashville has a really good defense and they prevent the Blackhawks from being a transition team and they have to dump the puck in, but then to solve UC Saros in the way they did, like it felt like they had to go through some through a couple hurdles. And then but I will say, Pat, like this win is exciting, right? But they got to win on Friday night for it to mean something. Like they can't, you know, they've got to carry that momentum into Friday night's game, because if they don't pick up 2 points on Friday night, then we look back at that game as exciting, and it wasn't really a launching point, because the odds are really still stacked against the Blackhawks.
Yes, they are. I mean, you give Nashville a point because you don't win it in regulation. We know that Dallas is now up on the Blackhawks as well with a couple games in hand. You know, Nashville has 52 points. The Hawks are 3 points back, and Dallas is 2 points back of Nashville. So, and then the other thing that really kills you is the regulation wins. Because as we've said on this podcast before, the tiebreaker is regulation wins, and the Hawks now trail Nashville by 3 in that department. So you could have picked up a regulation win in that department to hopefully get the closer to the tiebreaker. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was an incredible comeback. I was impressed that with all those texts you were getting. Now, last night's game was on NBCSN, so I wasn't in studio. I'm a little bit of a nut watching this team. I mean, I will throw out some you know, bombs, even though, you know, I probably shouldn't, because I got a microphone on and you never know if you got a hot mic situation going. But being at home last night, I was like, oh, I was just like, this is the way it's going to go down. Jeez, you know, and I and then they flipped that switch, and gosh, they were so relentless. And I'm like, it's like they have to play the perfect game to win. You know, that's the thing. It's like, that comeback was incredible. I don't know if it's sustainable. And, you know, and then you get that opportunity to put the dagger in them with the 4-minute power play. And, you know, that was a bit of a gut punch, you know, because you knew how important it was to win in regulation, and the table was set to do it. And they just couldn't generate much at all, as they end up going 0-for-4 on the power play. What did you think about that man advantage in particular?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate too, because that was, I mean, it came literally immediately after that fourth goal, like after they tied it. Like, it's not like time went on and then they had a power play and they were able to, like, it was a 4-minute power play, and you started to think a little selfishly, like, oh my gosh, like they weren't going to pick up 2 points. Now they can pick up 2 points in regulation. And it's unfortunate, because this is that opportunity, that 4-minute power play earlier in the year, towards the beginning of the year when that power play was hot, that's a power play that they probably cashed in on both opportunities, to be quite honest with you. And the fact that they couldn't get it done, you know, I kind of have like I'm like, well, it's a positive that they got 2 points, but you know, it's a negative that Nashville got 1 point. And then you look at the standings and you're like, oh, Dallas jumped the Blackhawks and they have 2 games in hand. So you kind of forget about that part of the equation. I think that the crazy thing about the comeback for me is that it wasn't like a gradual, like they got one, then a few minutes later they got another, then time went out. It happened so fast, and it, like, the tables turned so fast. It's like, you didn't even know what, like, I just had to like stop. I had to put my laptop down. I had to stop typing in my laptop, because I'm like, I don't even know what's going to happen in the next minute, because whatever happens in that next minute is going to be irrelevant. And I'm just going to have to whitewash my entire story again. So just a crazy comeback, but yeah, it's unfortunate they couldn't capitalize on that 4-minute power play.
And it was a lot of the young guys that were a part of it. Kane starts off with a great pass to Kalnuk. Really impressed with what Wyatt Kalnuk has brought to the table. He scores his third. Doc, who had probably his best game since returning, set up Hinostroza. We're going to get into Vinny here in a second. And then Suter the steal to Kubalik. you know, Kubalik did not connect on a couple one-time opportunities on the power play early in the game, but he buried that one. And then all of a sudden it was 4-4. And then the guy we've been talking about all year, Brandon Hagel, coming through with the overtime winner. You know, like, regardless of how this thing ends up this year, as far as making the playoffs or not, these that game is something that all those players can build off of down the road. They know that against a really good team in a high leverage situation in a building that had zero fans, they can put together a comeback like that. And I think that can only help them going forward as we continue to try to develop this team, develop the players, and get back to championship form.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the Blackhawks, obviously rally. They score five goals against Nashville. Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane combined for 1 point, and it was an assist by Patrick. Like, this was Brandon Hagel. This was Kirby Dach. This was Vinny Hinostroza. These were the young guys, and Malcolm Subban, we have to throw in there. Obviously, he gave up four goals, but he was this – I mean, he was probably the number
stellar.
One.
Stellar.
Unbelievable. And so it was these young guys that were carrying the load. It wasn't Patrick Kane strapping the Blackhawks on his shoulders and leading them to a victory. It was Brandon Hagel having a three-point night and his second overtime goal in four games. Like, that is what, in the long term, obviously if the Blackhawks don't make the playoffs this season, they can draw back on these experiences down the road. And that's what the long-term success is going to be for this team.
Time for our cold brew check presented by Dunkin'. We're going to check in on Vinny Hinostroza. So I told you that Wednesday's game was the first time the Blackhawks had erased a three-goal deficit in the third and one since November 19th, 2016. You know what happened on November 19th, 2016? Vinny Hinostroza scored his first NHL goal and assisted on the overtime game-winning goal. Fast forward to April 21st, 2021. Whoa. It's my
what is that?
NHL.com just popping up on my tablet. Hopefully that can be cut out, Tony.
We're leaving that in. No problem.
Leave that in. All right. We'll leave that in. I'll rally just like the Hawks. So I told you, you know, Hinostroza, first NHL goal, November 19, 2016. He assists on the overtime game winner. Then April 21st, 2021, Hinostroza gets his first goal in his return to the Blackhawks and assists on the overtime game-winning goal to Brandon Hagel. And so now that gives your cousin Vinny from Bartlett a goal and six assists, 7 points in eight games with the Blackhawks. He had 0 points in nine games with the Florida Panthers this year. Vinny, I know, you know, Jeremy knew him when they were in Rockford together, and he has been fantastic. Just a great, and I loved what he said. He and Hagel, he coined them the Bash Brothers. He said, yeah, look, we play a similar style. If we get out there together, let's be the Bash Brothers.
Right. He's been unbelievable. And specifically in Wednesday night's game, you can obviously look at the goal and the assist on the overtime goal, but he drew two penalties as well. And he also was the play, like, he was the reason why Pia Suter scored that first goal of the game. Like, he was everywhere. And it's not like he's getting 20 minutes of ice time. Like, he's doing this in a small sample size, and he's on the second power play unit. So it's not like he's getting all this opportunity and he's cashing in. Like, he's making the most of his ice time, and he's just been unbelievable. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with him at the end of the season, because they probably had no plans to kind of re-sign him and bring him back into the equation. And the fact that he's playing like this and he's still a young player, like, he's still developing as a player, makes me believe that there could be a possibility that he's back here with the Blackhawks next year.
I totally agree with you. You know, I think, I know he doesn't have the size, but he's got the speed, and you said drawing penalties. That can't go unnoticed. That tells me how hard you're working when you're causing the other team to commit an infraction and put your team on the power play. So, I mean, those are hustle plays for me. Those are huge. Those are the things Brandon Hagel was doing before the points started coming for him. Those first 10 games, we were like, no, but look what he did. He drew two penalties and he did this and he kept this play alive. The points will come. Well, Vinny, I think Vinny's is like, I think it's a shoe-in that he comes back. And he really seems like this, he's trying to make the most of this opportunity. Like, it's amazing to see a 27-year-old guy who just had his first kid, who's on an expiring contract, who, you know, had a bad taste in his mouth from the experience in Florida and kind of gets this new hockey lease on life. And it happens to be in his hometown and the whole nine yards that go with that. And he's like, I don't want to mess this up. So I think this is a marriage that could continue with a contract extension for sure, Charlie.
Yeah, and I think it really helps the fact that he did play with Jeremy Colton in his first year in Rockford. Like, maybe when he came to Chicago, when you immediately have the confidence of the coach, where you're not going somewhere and you need to prove that to the coach, that does wonders. And we're seeing that within Estroza. From day one, he felt like he was going to get a fair opportunity. And maybe he kind of psychologically felt like, well, I was there with Jeremy from day one. I know exactly what he's looking for. It just has that confidence in him that he didn't need to develop that with a new coach. Like, he already had it. And I think that's why he's playing so well
right now. That was cold brew check on Vinny Hinostroza, presented by Dunkin'. This season, be sure to grab a cold brew for game time, because where there's hockey, there's Dunkin'. You know, we've seen Brandon Hagel play up and down the lineup. Where do you think is his ideal spot? Like, do you think he's just like a middle six guy? Where do you see Hagel long-term? Or do you see him constantly floating up and down depending on where somebody needs an injection of life, or, you know, chemistry needs to be built? How do you see it?
Yeah, I think that's the good thing about Brandon Hagel. You can probably put him on your first, second, third, or fourth line, and he can thrive, right? Obviously, if we're talking about Stanley Cup contender or like a legitimate playoff contender, I feel like he's better suited probably on your bottom six, maybe your third line guy. If you're really deep, your fourth line guy, and he can provide that energy. But I think that's the beauty of what he brings. And it's weird too, because it's not like when he drops to the third line or whatever, he's still producing. Like, he's not just a guy that's benefiting from being on a line with offensive players like Patrick Kane or Vinny Hinostroza, the guys that are setting, like, he's the guy that's creating those chances. So that's why I feel like he's so effective on any of the lines. But if we're talking about like Stanley Cup contender, he's probably better suited on your third or fourth line. But that's no knock on him. Like, that, not that he's a third or fourth line guy. That's just like, he could play any of the four lines and be effective.
And look, you know, he's shown that he can finish here. Like, that was a hell of a goal to win in overtime. And then that shot was fantastic. I got to ask you, what the hell's going on with Connor Murphy's helmet? Like, seriously, how does that happen two games in a row? And then he's trying to put the helmet back on to stay on the ice, and the chin strap is going across his eyes. Like, and then he went to the bench and he started trying to, you know, you can open up the helmet and make it tighter on your head. I'm like, why wasn't this done after what happened on Monday night?
Right. Yeah. Obviously the first one that happened in Nashville, he made it seem like his helmet got ripped off by a predator. And that's why he was so furious about the goal. Cause he's like, basically my helmet. And even Jeremy Colleton said this afterwards, because I asked him and he was like, well, I don't think his helmet came off. I think it got ripped off. And so they were kind of pretty upset about the play that happened, and he had to go to the bench. And he, you know, even Murphy, like, he was like, I don't really agree with that, with this rule, because it basically allowed free liberty for the Predators to just go to stand in the front of the net. But yeah, the goal on Wednesday night, like, it was so unfortunate too, because he's trying, like, you could see, like, he's behind the goal and he's like, I am going to grab my helmet because I am not skating to the bench this time. And unfortunately, he goes and grabs his helmet. And it's not even like it's like draped across like his lip or anything. Like it's right over
across the eyes. I mean, it was like, honestly, it was like out of a scene out of a movie, you know, like it was like, are you, this is really how this is going to end. We're going to go down with another helmet popping off and insult to injury. He's able to stay on the ice, but the chin strap is blinding him. So he can't, I mean, I was like, I mean, that's where I was slamming the couch, you know? And I'm like, you know, thinking things were over. All right. This is the portion of the podcast where we pat each other on the back. So my partner, Charlie Romeliotis, insider, Blackhawks, NBC Sports Chicago, said, maybe they'll go with 11 forwards and 7D. And you know what? I was like, you know, Charlie, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. You want to generate some offense so you can double shift Kane and DeBrincat. And you've had so much inconsistency on the blue line, especially with guys going down in game. It would be nice to have the 7D. And lo and behold, that's the lineup decision that Jeremy went with. And DeHaan left the game. What's the latest on DeHaan's situation?
Yeah, he's day to day, I guess. But, you know, we obviously talked to Calvin going into Wednesday's game, and he said, I asked him specifically. I was like, is it tough when you're trying to weigh like how much you can contribute to the team versus, you know? And he said, yeah, it doesn't. I don't know if me at 70% is better than, you know, a rookie playing at 100%. Like, what's the risk reward? So, but yeah, that's exactly why I suggested 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, is because Kalanick was banged up and Calvin DeHaan was banged up, and then Adam Boqvist was in the concussion protocol, and it just felt like they were one little hit away again from going down 5 defensemen. Now, I will not pat myself on the back for this. Now, I know I said this way earlier in the season. I had a prediction that Dylan Strome might be a scratch. I did not expect that to happen. I didn't expect him to be that healthy scratch. I thought it was a little bit interesting too, because given the offensive struggles for the Blackhawks, the fact that they've only scored 8 goals in the first 6 games, and he was the scratch, it was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, Jeremy was asked about it on Thursday, and he basically said he was just a victim of circumstances. You know, he wanted to go with the 7D, and people are like, well, if you know DeHaan was partially banged up, why didn't you just start, you know, Stillman in that spot, or, you know, have Mitchell play or what have you? I think at the end of the day, Jeremy, while he loves having these young players getting experience in high leverage games, there are a lot of them. And, you know, I think, you know, he even alluded to, he's like, you know, Nashville's young, but they're not young on the blue line. You know, it's, and so I think he was reluctant to, you know, take a veteran out of such a huge game if he's able to go. And so we'll see where that goes with DeHaan. When I look at the options they had of who they wanted to sit, I mean, to me, it would come down to either Connolly or Strome. I'm not taking Hagel out. I know what he brings to the lineup. Hinostroza's not sitting down. Kubalik and Kershev, they deserve to be out there. And, you know, Kampf and Carpenter have been on that fourth line. So to me, you know, their options, when you kind of looked at it, I don't think they were a bunch of candidates that would have sat. I think it probably came down to Connolly and Strome, and they looked at Kubalik, Kurashev, and they probably figured, you know, it'd be good to get Kane out there with those guys and maybe Hagel or you know, however they're going to work it. And Strome was the odd man out.
Yeah. The decision obviously was more difficult when, you know, Brandon Hagel obviously returned to the lineup. Whereas if he wasn't, you know, you could easily look at Adam Gaudette and be like, okay, maybe Gaudette's a guy that we can remove from the lineup. And that's what they did. But, you know, it was obviously to put Brandon Hagel back into the lineup. And to your point too, about the defenseman, Nashville was a team that they play down low, right? They play from the down low and then they feed the puck. So I think that's a reason why they felt like they needed to have a veteran like Calvin DeHaan there, because it's so important playing playing from down low and how Nashville generates offense. So I think that probably played a role as well.
All right. I've been on a little bit of a heater predicting who's going to start in net. So after Subban had the shutout on Saturday in Detroit, the question was, who's going to start Monday against Nashville? And I said on the post-game show, I was like, you know, I think they'll go back to Lankinen. And, you know, hardly does a goalie lose the crease after a shutout. Lo and behold, they start Lankinen. And then on Monday night, he gets pulled. And, you know, initially, I don't think anybody thought like it was his performance that is the reason why they struggled in that game. I mean, you know, he was hung out to dry on some of those goals. Maybe you could look at one of the goals as one that maybe could have had a little bit better of an angle. But he goes out in the third period. Subban comes in, and the thought is, oh, you're preserving him for Wednesday night's game. And I just got this feeling like when they take a step back and look at how both have played, Subban stopping all 8 shots that he faced on Monday night, I think there might be a case to start Subban on Wednesday. And let me tell you, he was flat out fantastic. They had 16 Nashville high danger chances, 5-on-5. And he made some big time saves throughout that game. And he had a great line afterwards. He said, I just wish there were people in this building. I'd love to have heard them after that overtime game winner. And I'll be honest with you, that's another thing that I want to get into a little bit about. There should be some fans at the United Center watching both the Bulls and the Blackhawks, these final handful of home games that they have. I don't understand the reasoning for not having them.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there aren't any fans, because that would have been a game that, oh, it would have been electric. Not just the overtime win, but the comeback in general in the third period. And it's tough too, because this is like the Blackhawks, their playoff chances are really dwindling right now. So like, this is the time they saw it Monday in Nashville. They upped their capacity to 33%. And they were like, it was the best barn in the league like that night, like the atmosphere. And so you knew that Nashville fed off that. Back to the Malcolm Subban for a second, he faced 40 shots on goal. 24 of those shots came from the slot, that, wow, according to SportLogic. Like, that's hot. The Blackhawks had 11 slot shots. So Nashville more than doubled the Blackhawks in slot shots. So it wasn't just Malcolm Subban, you know, it stopping some pucks from 50 feet out from the blue line. Like, these were legit high quality stops. And it easily could have been, the game could have easily gotten away from the Blackhawks if it weren't for him. And Pat, I mean, they're going to go back to him on Friday night. Like, I don't know how you, like,
yeah, I think it's a no brainer that he starts Friday. So again, he's been fantastic. A little bit more on the fans. So, and again, I don't want to get political here by any means. That's not what this forum is about. But at this stage of the game, when every NHL team in the United States has green lit the opportunity for a portion of fans to return, and with the ability to go and dine inside limited capacity, with the number of people that have been vaccinated, with the fact that you can go to a White Sox or a Cubs game, I know it's outside. I just don't see if it's done safely, or if you just allow vaccinated individuals in. I really think you're hurting a you're hurting a billion-dollar corporation that has been hemorrhaging now, not hemorrhaging, but has lost a significant revenue stream because of the pandemic. And all signs point to them being able to recoup some of that, just a portion of that. And not to mention what it would do to the team. And I can only imagine what 1,200 fans or 2,000 fans would have felt like at the United Center on Wednesday night. I think that would have been great. And to me, you know, the mayor hinted that the United Center may soon have fans. I just don't know what we're waiting for. The season is almost over, and it would be Boy, how anticlimactic would it be if the Hawks are eliminated, say, in the next few games, you know, and on, then it's like, hey, fans are allowed here for the final three. And you're like, really? Could have used this, you know, when the last, you know, when Nashville was here for the two biggest games of the year. So I don't know. That's, I'll get off my soapbox, but I think it's time. And if you're hinting towards doing it, I just would like to know the reason why we can't do it now.
Right. And that's the frustrating part too, because a lot of the teams across the United States, they're getting their fans back for the stretch run. And yeah, the Blackhawks, you ask any player, coach, visiting team, what the best arena in the league is. And the United Center is right up there. And so the Blackhawks feed off that energy, and they've been number one in attendance for more than a decade now. And so it's unfortunate that they can't have fans, because Pat, you look at that last week of the season, obviously they finished with two home games against Dallas, but they have a stretch of home games right now. And then they have a week where they're in Carolina. So it's like, are they just going to get fans for the last two games of the season? According to Mayor Lightfoot, if that's the case. So that's the frustrating part, because yeah, like by that point, the Blackhawks might be out of the playoffs. And then, you know, it's difficult because the Blackhawks didn't have a chance to kind of feed off that energy during their playoff stretch run.
Yeah, I think six of their last nine are at the United Center. As we tape this podcast, Dallas is going to take on Detroit Thursday night, and Dallas is looking for their fifth straight win. They have been a juggernaut, just like Nashville has. As we mentioned, Nashville sits in the fourth seed with 52 points. They have eight games left. They have 17 regulation wins. Dallas, 2 points behind them. They have 11 games left. So they have a lot of games in hand on Nashville. They have 16 regulation wins. And then the Hawks sit at 49, nine games to go, 14 regulation wins. I mean, realistically, Charlie, they need to go like 7-2, and they have to get wins against Nashville on Friday in regulation and the final two against Dallas. And then they've got to hope that those two slip up and you know, lose some of their steam. I mean, I don't see any other way that the Hawks can get in unless they go on some kind of run like that. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. And it's tough too, because we're saying they need seven wins, and you look at the schedule after this, and it's Florida, it's Carolina, it's like they're facing these elite teams. So, and then you got Dallas at the end of the year. Like, these are no cakewalks. This isn't like they're getting Columbus and Detroit down the stretch here. Like, it's still, the cards are really stacked against the Blackhawks. So they're going to have to pick up as many points as possible, but they're going to have to do it in regulation to really give themselves a shot.
And here's the thing. I'm going big picture approach, just like the team has all season. I'm looking for efforts like I saw in the third period on Wednesday night. I'm looking to identify players. Vinny, does he deserve an extension? What's the ceiling on Hagel? You know, can Suter and Kurashev, can they continue their impressive first year in the National Hockey League in high level situations? How does DeBrincat finish things up? Can Strome return to form? Doc, can he, you know, start stacking some good games together and get back to the bubble form? And then a lot of questions on the back end that still are up in the air. You know, I look at PointsBet, and they look at the Central Division right now. They have Carolina as the favorite at minus 250, followed by Tampa at plus 320. They have Florida plus 400. Who do you think they have in the four spot in the Central?
I'd go Dallas.
Yeah, they've got Dallas at plus 40,000. They've got Nashville in a relative tie odds wise at plus 40,000, and the Hawks check in at plus 50,000. Yeah, I think it's Dallas, is just because, you know, we said, well, how are they going to handle the stretch at the end with all these games? They're in really good shape as far as the number of points they've already accumulated, and then having, you know, three games in hand on Nashville and two games in hand on the Blackhawks, you know, to their favor. So it's going to be interesting to see how things work out. Would you give the best chances to win the four seed to Dallas?
Yeah, I think it's Dallas. I think Dallas is going to finish with that as the four seed. And just because they're also, I think they're getting Tyler Seguin back soon. And I know Ben Bishop and Radulov got ruled out for the rest of the year, but it feels like they're peaking at the right time. And I know Nashville is too, but I don't know if Nashville can prolong this. Like, they've gotten so hot over the last month of the season where it seems like Dallas is just now starting to get hot. And I feel like that's going to propel them because they got a lot of gamers on that team. And obviously they were able to go to the Stanley Cup final last year. So they kind of know what it takes to play in these meaningful games down the stretch.
Hey, there was a report from Darren Dreger during NBCSN's intermission on Wednesday night. Here's what Dreger had to say on the latest on Jonathan Toews.
Well, look, it's an assumption that Jonathan Toews is done for this regular season with the Chicago Blackhawks. Nobody close to Jonathan Toews is saying that definitively, other than say he's very likely done for this season. But with fewer than 10 games remaining in the Hawks' regular season, it seems very likely. The good news, of course, nobody is being specific to what's gone on with Jonathan Toews. The good news is that his health is getting better. He's seen improvement over the months. And the expectation is that as long as he stays headed in the right direction, the direction that he's on right now, that he should be healthy and ready to return to the Chicago Blackhawks next season. Now, it has been a very challenging year for the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks, and by extension with his absence, it's been equally challenging for the Hawks in general.
So I don't think there's a ton of substance to that report. I mean, he reports that Jonathan is feeling healthy. He's getting better. He's seen improvement over the months. If things continue in this direction, he should be ready to return next season. So it's somewhat vague, but I think the biggest thing to take from it is there have been so many rumors out there that this report, even though it is vague, it at least kind of discredits some of the guesstimates and things that, like, career is over or this is going on or that's going on. This seems to kind of temper those types of rumors and suggests that things look to be in line, that Toews will be able to continue his career. What did you take from the Dreger report?
Yeah, that's my biggest takeaway. Obviously, Jonathan Toews is going to address everything when the time is right, and it's going to come from his own words. But the fact that he's on track to return next season really dispels some of the scary rumors that were out there throughout the year. And I think that's the most important part. Like, what's going on with Jonathan Toews is not my business. It's not your business. It's not anyone's business. I know we're all concerned for him, and a lot of the city of Chicago, because he's such a prolific figure in this town, people want to know if he's okay. But this report really, like, there were a lot of scary rumors that I've gotten so many direct messages from fans, and I'm sure you have too, about what's going on with Toews. I heard this, I heard that. And a lot of it was very scary. So I think just the report, I know it was vague. The fact that he's on track to return next season, that's all I think Chicago fans are encouraged to hear right now.
All right, next up, a critical game. Friday night, we cannot overstate it enough. Let's see if the Hawks can build off the biggest win in the Jeremy Colleton regime. I'll say that was the biggest win, even with what they did in the bubble in Edmonton. Would you agree?
Oh, man. I would say regular season, sure.
Okay. Biggest regular season win.
Okay.
All right. Well, they gotta follow that up with something spectacular. And let's not fall behind and make me start dropping F-bombs and wondering if I need to go down to the United Center and tighten Connor Murphy's chin strap. I texted you before the start of Wednesday's game. I don't dream a lot about the Blackhawks, folks, but I had this dream Tuesday night that they were up 6-0 and that, and then Nashville scored 2 to start the third. And then I woke up. So I left the dream, and it was 6-2, and I don't know how it finished. So clearly I was off, but I did see some goals coming.
Are you Pat, are you sure that dream was not the Penguins Devils game from the other day?
Maybe it was that. Yeah, you know what? Maybe it was. It actually probably was. I probably saw that on SportsCenter or whatever before I went to bed, and then I just pretended that I dreamt it. Okay. All right, well, look, let's see what this surprising Blackhawks team has given us. Surprises all year long. Let's keep it rolling. 9 games to go. We'll see you Friday night. Thank you for listening to the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Thanks to Charlie Romeliotis, as always. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast, presented by Coors Light.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.